We're joined by Arlie Hochschild. She is a renowned sociologist and produced a much-talked-about book about life here as opposed to life in California and in other parts of our country, Strangers in Their Own Land. Good morning, Arlie.
Good morning, Jim.
Nice to talk with you, Dr. Hochschild.
It's great to be here.
Well, the differences, I imagine, are significant. For anybody who's never been to California, we know enough about it, but nonetheless, Berkeley is a much different place than, say, Karen Crow.
Well, that's true. That's true. But since the book, this is my third time back, so I can't seem to stay away.
Well, you like the people.
Very much.
You like the culture.
Very much.
But at the same time, you kind of shake your head about the politics of the region.
Well, I wouldn't say shake my head. What I did was try and take my own alarm system off and climb what I came to think of as an empathy wall, because the U.S. has gotten so split, and so each side has gotten harder, and communication has broken down. So I wanted very much to get in touch with people that are good people on the other side and see if we can't find common ground. It took me 5 years, many trips, and that's what the book is about.
And this was long before the rise to the presidency of Donald Trump, but I think you tapped into some of the frustrations of people which led to his election.
Yes, that's right. I came to think of it as a deep story. It seems to me that under the politics of both sides, we have a deep story, a story that feels true. You take the facts out of the deep story, you take moral convictions out of the deep story. It's just what's left, a situation deeply important to you that feels true. And that's what the book is really about.
You wrote about stagnant wages. That's a familiar subject.
Right, absolutely. And forgotten cultures. In the deep story, it's like a metaphor. You're waiting in line as in a pilgrimage, facing up the hill. At the top of it is the American dream. And you've been waiting a long time, and the line hasn't moved, and you feel like other people are cutting ahead of you in line. Yeah.
Our guest is Arlie Russell Hochschild. She is a professor who spent much of her life in Berkeley, California, home of the University of California, one of the great universities in our country, and came to Louisiana for 5 years. She did some unearthing of nuggets of information in Strangers in Their Own Land. And one of the central questions in your book is, why do the people who would seem to benefit most from so-called big government abhor the very idea of it?
That's right. It's kind of the red state paradox. How come it's the poorest states, the states with the hardest hit schools and hospitals, the most polluted and the most lowest life expectancy, are also the states that receive more money from the federal government in aid than they give to it in tax dollars, also revile the government? What does the government mean? Why this? That was what my quest was.
Well, in Louisiana, on a per capita basis, our people get far more from the federal government than does the state of California. Yet in California, the perception of government is somewhat different than it is here. Is there any reason why? Or I'm sure there are several reasons, but is there a central one?
I think partly the people I came to know and am on this trip revisiting felt like the federal government, that was the North. They felt, which it was always wagging its moral finger at the South, partly they saw the federal government as a bigger, badder version of a state government, and they didn't feel like, for example, in that the Environmental Protection Agency of Louisiana was protecting the people. They didn't think it was doing its job, and I came to understand why they felt that way. And then there was, besides that, they saw the government as an instrument of those giving out favors in the deep story.
The guest for a little while longer is Arlie Russell Hochschild. She is in Louisiana. She's been here a few times. I think she said three since Strangers in Their Own Land was published. And this book received a lot of attention. I see editorial columnists still writing about it. And it is certainly an examination of why people are voting the way we are in our country. As we've noted a few times on this program, Donald Trump carried every state in the Southeastern Conference by big margins, with the lone exception of Florida, where he won a close one. But he is wildly popular in the South and wildly unpopular in places like California, where Arlie is living. In California, Hillary Clinton won by 4 million votes. In Louisiana, Donald Trump won by 400,000 votes. And when you if you were to expand that on a per-person basis, it's almost identical. So we have this wide chasm on how the world is viewed in our own country. Right. How does that happen? And before you answer, yeah. Louisiana used to be a blue state, and California used to be a red state.
That's right.
But this has happened within a generation.
That's right. And blue and red used to agree on matters of environment and even climate change, and that's gotten farther and farther apart. I think we're looking at different sources of news, and we see different things in this person, Donald Trump. We need to get our communication going back again, get rid of violence on both sides, and see if we can join a bridging movement. This is actually an emergent movement. If you were to Google the Bridge Alliance, you'll find 70 or 80 different organizations with names like Hi from the Other Side or Living Room Conversations, where we're trying to find common ground.
Now, right now it appears there's a much more heat than there is light.
Yeah.
A lot of anger out there.
That's right.
And editorial columnists have been writing of late that they fear it will get worse, not better.
I think that's right, and that's what we hear about. You're talking to an optimist here, and I do think that there is a grassroots movement that's appealing to the good angels in this country, and there are a lot of them.
Well, you like the people. It wasn't like you couldn't be friends with people you disagree with politically. Sometimes
right.
People can't stand it if somebody votes differently than they do or thinks differently than they do. But you embrace the people.
That's right, and it's not hard to do. And if you just put a little respect in the room, it's amazing what can be done and could be done. So I think we have a lot of precedents for left-right collaboration on particular issues. There's a group called Green Tea, which is for clean energy, Tea Party people for it. We need more organizations like that.
You have conservatives in California. We have
yes.
liberals in Louisiana. It's
exactly.
not a universal thing.
Exactly.
But the subtitle is Anger and Mourning on the American Right. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that underneath our feelings, our beliefs are a lot of feelings. And I sensed a lot of anger, and that you could see easily. But underneath that, there was also a mourning, a sense that, wait a minute, a wonderful way of life was being imperiled, and that people were made to suffer without any recognition of that suffering. They felt that they had a buried story, that they were, in a way, strangers in their own land. And so that's they were sad about that and about their environment. I discovered that Calcasieu Parish, where I did a lot of my getting to know people, was among the 2% most polluted in the whole nation, and that there was a high cancer rate, death from cancer, especially for men, And so there was a lot to be mournful for, mm-hmm. because they love their country, and they, more than anyone, they love the environment, and yet they consistently felt that regulation was somehow in the hands of the wrong people, wrong thing to do, and it was that conundrum that I really wanted to understand. You know, if you love it, why not keep it clean?
If you'd like to talk to this exceptional reporter, who is also a professor, Arlie Russell Hochschild, the number for us in our remaining time with her, 297-5633 and 877-217-5757, and you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Leonard Joseph writes, it's not so much left, right, red, blue, but wilderness, village, city. Republicans appeal to the wilderness village, Democrats appeal to the city. It does appear that our major cities are blue and the rest of the country is red.
I think that's completely right. But then let's get together. I would love to see whole senior classes of high schools around the nation. You get coasts going inland, inland kids going to the coast. You get south going north, north going to south. You wouldn't believe my email after the book has come out. It's unbelievable. I'm like this puppy dog waiting for the next surprise. But just a few days ago, a woman from an Episcopal church in Massachusetts said, oh, I've read your book. I'd like to get in touch with a congregation in Lake Charles. Can you put me in touch? So I'm calling my friend in Lake Charles, you know, Sharon, you want adventure? I don't know this lady. Uh-huh. She sounds nice. And so it goes. I mean, people, there are a lot of good angels, but I'm not seeing it in the public airwaves.
Well, tomorrow night you can see and hear Arlie in person. Dr. Hochschild will be at LSU at the Claude Shaver Theater, 7:30 tomorrow night. That's the Music and Dramatic Arts Building, 7:30 Thursday night. 877-217-5757. Trish from Grand Coteau. Good morning, Trish. You're on with Arlie.
Good morning.
Good morning, Trish.
Hi. I am also from the Bay Area, although I attended the school that's the arch enemy of UC Berkeley. And I've lived in Louisiana for 17 years now.
Uh-huh.
And I moved here because the quality of life is really rich.
Uh-huh.
As you can see with the Cajun Navy, people care about each other.
Exactly.
Family is important. The pace of life is a lot slower.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of mental adjusting I had to do. For instance, Civil War is still very alive down here.
Right.
And a lot of the issues around that are not resolved.
Right.
People care about the environment, but on the other hand, those things that destroy the environment, mm-hmm. all the chemical plants,
right.
and that kind of thing in the Lake Charles area are the things that provide jobs and get people out of poverty.
Right.
So there's a real dichotomy in how people feel about things. They feel sometimes because of the poverty level that the EPA is their enemy. They're
right.
putting in all kinds of regulations that prohibit businesses from functioning and fully employing people.
They do believe
because
that.
The economy here is so based on the oil business in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real dichotomy
right.
existent here.
Right.
Thank you, Trish.
You know, you're absolutely right, but in the research that I did for Strangers, I found that in Louisiana, only 15% of jobs, and that's a high estimate, actually have to do with oil, and that these are highly automated plants, and often the profits that leak out actually to stockholders who don't live in Louisiana, so it doesn't enrich the state. And Louisiana was poor before oil came, and it's poor still, second poorest state. So that's to think about how, if you compare it to Norway, for example, the people have actually benefited from oil. Norway's an oil state.
Texas is an oil state, too. And in 1940, New Orleans had more people than did Houston. 1950, they were about even, and now Houston has 6.6 million people in its metro area, and New Orleans has 1.3. So something happened that went beyond the oil business. It's an amazing story that has yet to be told. Perhaps a sociologist like you can unearth why we stayed stagnant in Texas, which has a lot of the same issues and the same cultural benefits that we have, exploded. 877-217-5757. Jane in Port Allen. Jane, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. What a privilege to speak with you. I'm pretty sure you're aware, since you're speaking at LSU tomorrow, that your book is on the required reading for the Honors College. And because it was, and my son is just starting there, I decided to buy it for myself, and I'm only into it by three or four chapters. And I have to say, it reads like a novel, and it's just really, you are an excellent writer.
Thank you.
And I also have Cajun heritage, my grandparents, and of course those relatives of my mother's siblings are from that part of Louisiana that profited from the oil industry in various ways. And I believe, and I haven't gotten into your book because I'm looking for hope through your words, but
it's there.
I have to believe education has to be the answer, and that is making the young generation aware that you can't look to just the moment. You have to look to the future.
Right.
And so I'm hoping that's in the book, and I want to come listen to you tomorrow.
Oh, wonderful.
And, okay.
I look forward to meeting you tomorrow.
7:30, by the way, at the Claude Shaver Theater at LSU.
And thank you so much for your words. And I agree completely that education is very important. I have met the most sparky, bright kind of kids so far. I've been having meals with them and talking about issues that they saw in the book that they want to know more about. One being, for example, the trade-offs between cleaning up pollution and jobs. Is it true that the cleaner you have at the environment, the fewer jobs? Actually, the book says no. There are questions we need to put on the agenda, the public agenda, to really investigate that would be good for Louisiana.
And Tony Garisco is the person responsible for her appearance here today, the former state senator. And Tony, I recall when I started covering the legislature in the early 80s, you were a member and it was almost all Democratic. And now the Republican Party has taken control of the Louisiana legislature. Do you have any thoughts on why that's happened?
Yeah, I remember when the first, they had a special election for state senate, and the first person, the first Republican was sworn in, and he said, I'm now the minority leader.
Hollis?
Hollis, yeah.
Ben Hollis.
And so, well, I think what you read well, it's a lot of reasons, but the move in the South from the time of the Civil Rights Movement in 64 and 65 started to deliver in the federal government's so-called intrusion into the South by forcing and eliminating segregation, began to have a Southern strategy of throwing the nation, the changing from Democrat to Republican big time, and now that's where we are.
Well, you represented the oil patch as a senator from Morgan City.
I did.
And there is this affinity for the oil industry, and getting to some of the themes in Arlie's book, the economic benefits certainly outweigh the environmental concerns in our state. I think that's a generality that
That's a generality,
true.
And it may be a myth.
A myth.
Yeah, that say again what you said. I'm sorry.
Well, why are we not electing people who are stressing the environment rather than those who?
Oh, because they do think that the climate change is a myth, and it's a hoax, and they think that these crazy environmentalists, EPA and so forth from Washington, won't take care of them.
Let's go to one more caller, Allie Baltazar, and this is William in the Garden District. William, you're on with Arlie. Hi, William.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having your program. You do a really great job.
Thank you.
And I had the pleasure of meeting Arlie a couple of times in the last few years, and really appreciate what she's pulled together. Most people don't understand her work, but I think it's a valuable assessment of kind of where things are in Louisiana and the United States.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Arlie.
Well, thank you, William.
Thank you. And any thoughts about Charlottesville, which has been in the news?
I've been talking to my friends in Lake Charles and DeRidder and Longvale, and put by them an idea that a colleague of mine had, Troy Duster. And he had the idea that, look, people are attached to statues and the history of Confederate statues. Don't take the Robert E. Lee down, but put another statue of John Brown or some other figure, Frederick Douglass, Ida B. Wells, together there. So you're not getting rid of history, mm-hmm. but you're putting the unresolved sort of story out there for us all to learn from and resolve.
Well, thanks for joining us today. Arlie Russell Hochschild, hopefully we'll have occasion to talk with you again. I'm sure we will.
Thank you so much, Jim.
And you can
My
meet
pleasure.
This fine lady tomorrow night at LSU's Thursday, 7:30, Claude Shaver Theater. Thank you, Tony Garisco, as well.